Okay, today we're starting the third perek. Okay, the structure is a little similar to the previous perek. We started out with some topic in Erchin, where there was a minimum shiur and then a maximum, and the Mishnah went off on a tangent. Oh, this also has, and this also has, and this also has, and basically went into a whole discussion. In fact, the shiur on Shabbat and Shul was interesting. It connected with everything we've been learning. It was all about Kohanim, and maybe we'll mention this a drop today, about the Korach's whole problem was who made you in charge. And we talked a lot last week about the Levim and their particular job, and could the Kohanim do the Levim's job? Could the Levim do the Kohanim's job? And what happens if somebody does the wrong job? And even within the Levim, there were the singers and the one who closed the gates, and you weren't allowed to do what wasn't yours. It was all about this whole concept of, you know, that there's certain roles people are supposed to play. And obviously in the modern world, we struggle with that somewhat. Like, Kohanim, how are they any really different than anybody else? And why are they, you know, considered on a different, you know, and maybe it's just also their job is different. You know, the whole question in the shiur, one of them was, what if someone got up to Duchen and they weren't a Kohen? You know, what do you do, right? So we learned all these things, you get killed if you do the wrong thing, but they weren't talking about Berkat Kohanim. You know, what about Berkat Kohanim? What's the halacha if someone does that? Anyway, it was interesting, connected with all the things we were learning about. I thought it was very interesting. Okay. Which also goes back to, again, maybe the reason why some of the Levim were chosen, right? Within that, some people, in the Kohanim, everybody did everything. But the Levim, some people were chosen for one track, some people were chosen for another track, and maybe there was a little bit of maneuvering depending on what your abilities were. Now we're talking about something totally different, but again, we're going to start from Erchin, and we're going to say what's true here is true in a lot of other places, and we're going to compare. So, or not compare, but go into each case. Yesh be'erchin lahakel ulahachmir. Erchin can sometimes come out again. What is Erchin? When you say, I'm giving the value of myself or a particular person, there's a different value based on how old you are, what gender you are, and based on all those issues, it will affect how much you pay. It has nothing to do with your value in the shuk, what you would go for in the marketplace. Again, we don't sell people generally, but as a slave, if you were to be hired as a slave, what you would go for. So now, because the Torah gave a set amount, sometimes that goes l'kula, and sometimes it goes l'chumra. Okay, we're going to see in a minute, the Mishnah is going to give an example. So first let's just go through our big list. It's typical of the Mishnah, this is a very typical structure. It lists a whole bunch of things and then starts to explain one by one. All these cases, okay, what's unique about all these cases? We've seen them before. All of these, the Torah specifies a specific amount of money. So because they all specify a specific amount of money, sometimes that money, that amount, might come out to be machmir, and sometimes it might come out to be mekel, depending on your situation or whatever it might be. So let's go through the cases briefly, because again, we're going to get into them much more in depth as we go on. So sdeh chuza is when you have a field that you inherited from your father. It's called an ancestral field. It's basically been passed down for generations. If you remember, the way it happens, it works is if you sell such a field, then it returns to you in the yovel year. And you're actually not supposed to sell such a field, but if you're poor and you can't afford, then you can sell it. You have the right to buy it back. You can go back to, right? Normally we sell a house because we can't afford it. So we sell it and we're stuck, right? You can't just go 2 years later and say, I want to buy it back. And they'll say, sorry, but we're living here. But in those days, if it was a sdeh chuza, you were allowed to buy it back, but you had to wait a minimum of 2 years' time. Okay, remember this because it's going to come up later today. You had to wait a minimum of 2 years' time. And then you were allowed to try to buy it back. Or, you know, you were allowed to buy it back. They'd have to give it back to you. That's if you sell it. If you redeem, and if you didn't buy it back, it reverts back to you in the yovel year. Remember, generally people would only sell it for X amount of money because they knew they were only getting it for a certain amount of time. If you're makdish a field, okay, that's the track of selling. If you say, I'm giving this to the Beit HaMikdash, then what are you supposed to do? Well, then you're supposed to redeem the field at some point. You take funds and you give that to the Beit HaMikdash. And it also says that you're supposed to add a fifth if you yourself do it. If somebody else does it for you, they don't have to add a fifth. But if you do it, you have to add a fifth, which is really a quarter. We've done this many times, how a fifth there is really a quarter. It goes on the upper amount. Once you take the quarter, it's now a fifth of the entire value. So you have to basically redeem it. The amount that you have to pay for that field, if it's an ancestral field, is a set amount of money. It's 50 shekel per what we call chamishim is zerach homer soim or something exactly like that. It means for the amount, okay, 50 shekel forever for an amount that you would plant 30 se'ah of se'orim, okay? That if you planted se'orim, it would grow 30 se'ahs worth of se'orim, okay? Which is, it basically means 50 shekel kesef for a, you know, let's say per, you know, X square meters. Okay, that's like the way I'd say it. Okay, that's the amount. So again, it could be lahakel ulachmir. If it was great land, so 50 shekel would be very little. If it was poor land, 50 shekel would be a lot. So you could sometimes end up lakula, sometimes lachumra. Shor hamuad shehemita eved, that's the next case. You have an ox that gored many people already, right? It already gored three times, either animals or people. It's now called a shor muad. It was warned, etc. And now it kills an eved kanani. So that has a din lahakel ulachmir. Again, what do we say? You're supposed to pay according to the Torah. It's again an amount where there's a set amount, 30 shekel kesef. So now, 30 shekel kesef, there could be an eved that's worth more. There could be an eved worth less. Ones u'mefatei v'motzi shemer. Here we have a man who rapes a woman or seduces a woman. According to the Torah, they have to pay 50 shekel kesef. Why 50 shekel kesef? Okay, let's go back to the amount. What's 50 shekel kesef? A shekel is 4 zuz. It's 200 zuz. That's the amount of a ketubah for a virgin. So he basically took away her virginity. Therefore, he has to pay the amount that he's, you know, the two. It's not exactly correlated because she could still get a ketubah for 100, but that's the amount. The 50 is the same as 200 zuz of a ketubah. Mefate, he only has to pay it if he doesn't marry her. Remember in the Torah, even though we think this is crazy, if somebody rapes or seduces someone, they're actually supposed to marry them. He has to pay her 50 shekel kesef no matter what if he rapes her, but mefate only if he doesn't marry her, and the whole idea there was that, you know, she'd be unwanted and it would be very hard for her to get married. She also can just, she can say, I don't want to marry him, that's allowed. Okay, v'motzi shemra, this is a man who marries a woman and then claims she doesn't have betulim, and he said, I gave her 200 zuz in the ketubah, right? But then it turns out he lied, and she really did have betulim. He has to pay 100 shekel kesef. So those also lahakel ulachmir, depending on the value of the woman that we're talking about. Yesh be'erchin lahakel, okay, we should just put it out there, right? It's a little strange to talk about value when it comes to women, but we'll get back to that in a bit. Et hana'asha b'Yisrael ve'et ha'kohorsha b'Yisrael. Oh, sorry, echad she'aketzad, I skipped. Yesh be'erchin lahakel ulachmir. So now we're going back and we're going to discuss each case in detail. Ketzad, in our mission we're only going to get to erchin, and in each subsequent mission we'll get to each topic. Echad she'arich et hana'asha b'Yisrael ve'et ha'kohorsha b'Yisrael. Here it sounds like they're talking about beauty, right? It doesn't necessarily mean physical beauty, although it could be. Like a physically beautiful slave might be worth more. But also it means just strong, healthy, okay? The most beautiful in Israel or the worst in Israel, the ugliest. Notein chamishim sela, no matter what, it's chamishim sela. V'imamar, but if he said, and each time they're going to say, well, there's a different parallel case, v'imamar harei damav alai, but if he said it in the wording of a neder, I'm taking upon myself the value of this person, not using the words erchin, then we already learned this, then he actually gives the value. So if he says erchin, it's going to be the 50 shekel. But if it's a man, let's say, right, that's a man between the ages of 20 and 60. If you say arei damav alai, then he gives the value. Okay, now the Gemara is going to start off with an aside. Yesh be'erchin lakel ulachmir ketzad echad she'arich v'chulei. Now notice the wording in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, etana asha b'Yisrael v'etaka orsha b'Yisrael. So it sounds like Bisrael im bove kochavim lo. It sounds like if you give the erech of a non-Jew, it's not going to be, you don't owe anything. There's no such thing as erechim by a non-Jew. We already discussed that was a machloket tanaim, whether you could, if you say erech of a non-Jew upon me, it works or it doesn't work. So now what do they say? Well, according to our Mishnah, since they only mention Yisrael, it sounds like it's only Yisrael. If that's the case, lema manitin deloka Rabbi Meir. Our Mishnah must not go according to Rabbi Meir, which again, we never like our Mishnah not to go by Rabbi Meir, because we have a concept that says, stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir. Generally, a Mishnah will go like Rabbi Meir if it doesn't have a name. Why is it not like Rabbi Meir? It's not, as the Mishnah says, ove kochavim, Rabbi Meir omer ne'erach avaloma arich. A non-Jew can't do erichin. If a non-Jew says, Erech ploni alai or erki alai, it's nothing. But if somebody says, I'm giving the value of a non-Jew, that does have value. So it sounds like our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, no, we're going to give a few reasons why we could say it's like Rabbi Meir. The first answer is, afilu tema Rabbi Meir, hu adin da afilu ovei kochavim nami. Really, could have said Ovei Kochavim. But Milta Agav Orchei Kamashma. And the reason the Mishnah chose just Israel is because it wanted to teach us something else. What? Here's a really interesting halacha. Kidya Rav Yehuda Marav. To Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Asur La'adam Sheyomar Kama Ne'e Kna'ani Zeh. You're not allowed to say, how beautiful is this Kna'ani person? Now, this comes from Lo Techanem. It's actually a halacha specifically to the seven nations when we conquer the land. And the concern is if you start saying how beautiful this person is, you're going to end up hanging out with them and learning from them. You know, learning from their bad deeds. Remember, the whole thing of the Torah is don't marry them because, or don't have what to do with them. And that's number one, worried about intermarriage, but also really worried about learning from their bad deeds. It talks about a lot in Sefer Devarim. They're worried about all the way they behave. So it says you can't say Kamanei Kna'ani Zeh because you'll get close to them. And that's what he's trying to tell you. There's no saying kama na'e. You know, we don't want to call a na'esha b'knani because we'll end up, right? Then we'll end up complimenting them, and you're not techanim from the lashon of chen, okay? Like grace. You can't say, oh, how beautiful they are. However, the poskim talk about this. If you're saying it in terms of, wow, what a beautiful creation that God created, that's allowed because then you're praising God. But if you're saying specifically about the person themselves, it's more of an issue. So then they say, well, if you can't say how na'e they are, that's why the Mishnah didn't say it, but belitne etana esha b'Yisrael ve'etah ka'or sheba k'na'anim. You could have said the ugly one could have been the k'na'anim, and then we know, right, the k'na'anim are a part of it. So what do they say? B'chad uma kamayri. The whole topic here is just within, they're talking within one nation. They're talking about a range within the Jewish people, beautiful to ugly, okay? So then they, right, betrei uma lo mayri. The Mishnah wasn't talking about trei umot. Again, here, this is all to just say, Ovdim, the Knanim or non-Jews were just not mentioned in the Mishnah for that other reason, but having nothing to do with really the halacha that you theoretically could do Erchin on non-Jews, in which case the Mishnah would match Rabbi Meir. So then they say, but wait, you're going to say that the Mishnah keeps within one topic? Look ahead a few Mishnayot when it talks about the Onus and Mefata, and I said we get back to this. Haktane, it says in the Mishnah, Hagdola Shabikuna Vetakna Shabi Yisrael. Here they talk about the greatest among the Kohanim women, right, like a Bat Kohen of the highest stature, to the lowest, you know, a plain Yisraelite woman who's, you know, a ktana, like a low level status. They both get paid the same. If somebody rapes one of those people, they have to pay the same amount of money. So here you see they give a range between Dola Shabikuna, Ktana Shabi Yisrael. But then they say, oh, you're comparing apples and oranges. That doesn't prove that you could have done Hagdola Shabi, you know, the Na'ash Shabi Israel and Hako'or Shabi Knanim, because Hatam Chad Umahu, Elamach Dishu de Kiddush Kohanim Tfei. Okay, this is what I said before about we're all part of one nation. It's just Kohanim have an added element of Kedusha to them, right? A higher level of sanctity, but not that they're really, it's not considered a different nation. And that's why it didn't bring up Knanim, but it did bring up comparison of Kohanim to Israeli. That was the first answer to show our Mishnah could be Rabbi Meir. Second answer is Vibait Ema, I did kabai limit ne sefa steachuza. Because of the next Mishnah where it talks about a steachuza, now an ancestral property is only for Jews. It's not for non-Jews. There's no such thing. So Dibi Israel Dimishkachala, Babove Kochavim Lomishkachala, we don't find a case of a steachuza by a non-Jew. Therefore, they stuck with Jews in our Mishnah, but not because non-Jews couldn't be included. They could have been. It's just to use that. And therefore, lo mishkachala, right, because bo'ovei kochavim lo mishkachala de la b'nei achuza ninu. They're not part of this b'nei achuza. And therefore, mishum hachi katan ela b'Yisrael. That's why the Mishnah chose Israel, not having anything to do with Rabbi Meir. Okay. So, again, we explain that just because it talks about Israel in the Mishnah doesn't mean non-Jews. Theoretically, one could read the Mishnah that holds like Rabbi Meir that you could do erchin on a non-Jew. Next topic, steachuza. Steachuza la'kel u'lachmir kitzad. So how could it be a kula and a chum? Echad ha'makdish b'chulat ha'machoz, v'echad ha'makdish b'pardesot sabasti, noten zemer zera chomer sa'orim ha'chamishim shekel kesef. Okay, whether your makdish in the chulat ha'machoz. Now what does this mean? Big debate, exactly what it is. Could be outside the city, Rashi says. It was the way the fields worked, okay, there was the city, we've talked about this a number of times, and then the fields were outside the city. Nobody had fields in the city. Now, you might think it's good to have your field close to the city. No, it's really bad. Number one, it's bad because people trample on your field as they walk into the city, so they're going to ruin your field. Number two, they're going to ruin your field. Okay, let's talk about physical and metaphysical. They're going to ruin your field in a physical way. But they also point out, Rashi says another possibility is that Mechoz was a specific place where they didn't have good fields. Maybe that was it. But another reason people give, I think it's from the Gemara Baba Batra, that people will look at your field and they'll say, oh, what a beautiful field, and that brings the Ayin Hara. Mm-hmm. It's going to cause, right, whenever people look highly upon your stuff, it's not a good thing. It causes Ayin Hara, and eventually your stuff won't grow. So either which way, right, however you look at it, it's a bad thing. Okay, so three possibilities, right? Either it's outside the city and then it's bad for one of two reasons, or it was in a specific area that wasn't good, which actually matches it a little better, saying Pardesot Sebasti, because Sebasti is Sebastia, which is right in the Shomron, and that was considered good fields. Okay, so it makes more sense to say that's a location and that was a particular location in terms of parallel, the Mishnah being parallel. So now, whether it's a bad field or whether it's a good field, what?
There's also a difference between a sandy area.
Right. Yeah. There's another. Right. Flowing. Some people say it's sandy. That was a fourth interpretation.
Or orchard. Pardesia.
Right. Sand versus orchards where things were growing. Okay. We're going to talk about where actually things growing here or not. It's not so clear. So either which way, notain zera chomer so'orim chamishim shekel kesef. Again, right? A field that can grow a zera chomer so'orim, that will be right that amount for chamishim shekel kesef. Obviously, you're going to do it, you're going to figure out proportionally how much you'd have to pay. So there again, it could be lachel, could be lachmir. Ubiste mikneh, now we say, as opposed to a steh achuza, okay, let me just read you some of the psukim. This all comes from Vayikra Kafzayin. I'm reading the psukim because we're going to see the machloket and how they understand the psukim. So in Vayikra Kafzayin, it gives all these laws about redeeming fields. And it says in pasuk, yurchet, no, Tetzayin. If he does it from a steh chuzah, he sanctifies it. That's our pasuk. Then it goes off. Okay, there's another point I didn't mention, which is they figure out it's chamishim shekel kesef if you sold it in the first year of the Yovel year. If you sold it in the second year, it goes down. We actually saw this not long ago. Each year it goes down a shekel. Okay? Then they say a few psukim later in Kaf Bet, ve'im etzdei miknato, but if you bought a field, asher lo misteach huzato, which is not, now we're going to darshan, why does it say asher lo? It should be obvious, if it's stei mikneh, then it's not your steach huzato, it's something you purchased. Yakdish lashem, if he's makdish that, then it says, and it's not so clear what this means, v'chishav lo ha-kohenet michsa te'erkecha ad shnat ha-yovel, v'natana te'erkecha bayom ulukodesh lashem. It sounds pretty clear that what it means is we evaluate it based on its value. Okay? Very simple. Okay, but we're going to see there's a machloket. So b'stei mikneh notenet shuvyo. Shuvyo. Okay, just like by erchin, there's erchin and neder. One is the value of the Torah, one, a set value. One is according to the value of it, of the actual eved or a person. Likewise here, it's the field, b'stei achuzaz, a set amount. And versus the stamikneh field that you bought, you purchase it, and then you're makdish it. What happens then, by the way? You're makdish it. You have to pay the amount until the yovel year. And then, when the yovel year comes, it goes back to its original owner. Okay? Ubistamikneh tenet shivyo. Rabbi Eliezer omer, echad stamikneh ve'echad stachuzah. No, really, for both of them, you give chamishim shekel kesef. We're going to have to see how he learns that, because it doesn't sound like that from the pshat. Ma ben stachuzel estemikneh. So according to him, then what's the difference? Because the Torah does set them up as two different things. Shebstachuzel noten chomesh, ubestemikneh eno noten chomesh. The added fifth is only for a stachuzel, and therefore the second part of the Torah where it says if it's stemikneh, it doesn't mention a fifth. That's because a fifth is irrelevant for them. And that's the difference according to him. Okay, starting with the Gemara now. Amar Rav Huna. Hikdish sadeh melea ilanot. What if you makdish a field? Until now, it sounds like, okay, you makdish a field. We didn't talk about what if there's things growing in the field. Okay, when we talked about the pardesot, it sounded like there were things growing there. Pardes generally in the Mishnah means a vineyard, not a, like we think of an orchard as a fruit orchard, but no, it's a vineyard. So anyway, it sounds like everything, including, right? But now what does he say? If your makdish sadeh melea ilanot was full of trees, keshu podan, when he goes to redeem it, podei ilanot b'shovyan, when you go to redeem the tree, the whole field with the trees, if you said, I'm makdish this whole field, so there's trees in it, well, you have to do the trees according to their value, and then the land, according to what the land is worth. But I was thinking, people buy, you buy a house, right? The house is made up of, number one, what the land is worth, and number two, what the actual house is worth. It's like that also. So that's what he says. But, okay, now we're going to have to explain his shita and then see that not everybody agrees with him. So podeh lenapa shavyan, and then podeh karka beit zerach chomer sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. So what do they assume? Alma kasava rav huna, he must hold that what? Adam makdish, when somebody sanctifies something to the Bein HaMikdash, ba'ayin yafa makdish, he must be being generous, with a generous eye, that he meant everything. Okay, this separate and that separate. So now the Gemara is going to question, Rav Nachman's going to question Rav Huna. Eitzivei Rav Nachman leRav Huna. Okay, he's going to bring three different sources that seem to contradict. First one is our Mishnah. Echana makdish b'chulan ha'machoz, ve'echana makdish b'pardesot sabatzti, noten zera chomer so'orim, b'chamishim shekel kesef. So what does it sound like? Even though you gave this pardes, which presumably was full of fruits, or full of grapes, you still only give chamishim shekel. So what does Rav Huna answer? Amalei ru'u yala pardeso kamina. I didn't mean actual pardeso where things were growing. I meant an area that you could grow a pardes from is chamishim shekel kesef, which means if it had things growing, you would obviously have to redeem those separately. Second source, etive. Beit zera, etive is a question on right from a Tanaitic source on an Amora. So again, he's asking on Rav Huna. Beit zera, okay, the Torah says beit zera from a so'orim. So he says beit zera, ein li ela beit zera, beit zera. It sounds like what? A field that one could plant, potentially. But what if it was stegafanim, uste kanim, uste lano, places where things were already growing, minai, and how do we know that it's this, that you still have to give this particular amount? Talmud lamar, sadeh mikol makom. Because it says sadeh, a field means any kind of field, whether things are growing or things aren't growing. So how are you going to answer that? That sounds very particular. Even if things are growing, it's still 50 shekel kesef. How's Rav Huna going to say then with the trees? Amar le, hachinami, podeh v'chozer podeh. What it means is, first redeem the trees, even though things are growing there, it's still chamishim shekel kesef for the land. But you also still have to redeem the trees. It just didn't specify that, but that's obviously what it meant, according to Rav Huna. Third question. This one's going to be a little bit more long-winded. Now we're going to have a brighter with a bunch of different sections. Higdish shlosha ilanot mimata asara lebeit se'ah. If you are makdish, you have a field with, let's say, 10 trees growing in a space of where a beit se'ah, that's a measurement. That's like the average amount that you would plant in a beit se'ah would be 10 trees. So if you have 10 trees within that space and you designate three of the trees, the assumption is that what you mean is those three trees, imagine like you did a triangle, like three trees in a triangle, anything within that triangle space, okay, would be included. Hareze ikdish eta karka ve'eta ilanot shebenehem. Okay, your makdish, not only the trees, you didn't mean just those three trees, you meant everything in between them, all the trees in between them, and the land. Now, what if your makdish, okay, so kishu podeh, when he goes to redeem, here it's going to say, podeh beit zera chomer so'im b'chamishim shekel kesef. Okay, you're going to have to redeem it with what? 50 shekel kesef. It sounds like, again, what? Without the trees. Now, the obvious answer is going to be chozer upodet, right? Meaning, it just didn't specify, first you do the trees, then you do the land. But we're going to see why, from the last case of this braita, it doesn't make sense to say that here, because it says it there, and from when it says it there, it means it says it there, and it doesn't say it here. It must be on purpose. So let's keep going, though, through the other cases, till we get to the case that's important to us. Pachom mikain or yeter mikain, if it's more dense than those 10 trees in a beit se'ah, or more spread out, or first he said, I'm makdish that tree. And then he said, oh, and I'm also makdish this tree. And then he says, and I'm makdish that tree. Then we assume he didn't mean anything other than those three trees. Not only that, but afilu hikdish ilanotav, v'acharka hikdish karka, even if he was makdish, first the trees, then the land, kishu podeh, podeh. Now here comes the case. Let's say he was makdish first the trees, then he was makdish the land. Now, what are you going to assume is going to happen, right? Then, kishu podeh, podeh te ilanot b'shov yehen, b'chozer podeh, karka beit zera chomer sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Only when he separates it and he says, first I makdish the trees, then I makdish the land, if he does it in two different times, right, then we're going to say that's when he has to be podeh, first the trees, then the land, which makes it sound like if he did it all at once, you wouldn't have to do both. So therefore they say, and if you want to answer here like we did before, that in the first case, because it said specifically in the last case, you have to redeem first the trees and then the rest, then you pay the 50 shekel. From there one can infer that the first case it didn't say so. In which case we have a question against Rav Huna from this Braita. To answer this question, again we're going to get a little more complicated, we're going to say, Elahamani Rabbi Shimonhi. Very simply, at this point it's simple, we'll get a little more complicated soon. That Braita goes according to Rabbi Shimon. In other words, you can't ask a question of Rav Huna when the Braita follows a unique opinion. You could just say, Rav Huna doesn't agree with that Braita. What did Rabbi Shimon say? Remember what Rav Huna said. Rav Huna said, why do you have to redeem the trees and then the land? Because when you're machdish very generously, so you must have meant everything. But Rabbi Shimon thinks, now again, let's just clarify generations. Rav Huna's an Amora. He's trying to explain a Braita that doesn't agree with him. He says, oh, that Braita holds by a different Tanaitic opinion from the time of the Braita. So there was obviously a Machloket Tanaim about whether we're Magdish Bayim Ra'ah, Magdish Bayim Yafah, and Rav Huna simply doesn't possibly like Rabbi Shimon, who says Magdish Bayim Ra'ah Magdish. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon Ida Amar Magdish Bayim Ra'ah Magdish. And therefore, this is Rabbi Shimon who says you only pay the 50 shekel because he doesn't think that you're supposed to pay for the trees also, because he thinks that when you're makdish the bare minimum and not the maximum. How do we know Rabbi Shimon holds this? Titanya. Ha-makdish et ha-sadeh, hikdish et kula. If you're makdish a field, you're makdish anything that's found in that field. Rabbi Shimon omer lo hikdish ela charuv hamurkav ha-sadana shikma. When you're makdish the field, you're really only makdish the items that are inside the field that are apparently, according to some of the profession, these are old trees, that an old tree takes nutrients much more than other things, and therefore when you were talking about the land, you were talking about what takes a lot of nourishment from the land, okay, which is the stump of the sycamore. The stump of the sycamore is actually, they would cut it down so it would grow better, or the charuv hamurkav, a grafted carob tree, which those things get a lot from the ground, and therefore those are the only things and not things that don't really get a lot of nourishment from the ground. So there you see, he's makdish b'ayim ra'ah. But now, here comes the more complicated part. E Rabbi Shimon, now, so the whole thing is that Braita is Rabbi Shimon. If you want to say the Braita is Rabbi Shimon, something else doesn't correspond with something else Rabbi Shimon says. E Maseifa, in the last case, what did we see? The Lord Ela afilu ikdishi lanotaba harka chikdish karka kshu podet podeti lanot b'shavihem b'chozer podet b'tzer chomesorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. Now, right, it says, if first you did the trees, then you said, I'm sanctifying the land, you redeem the trees, and then you redeem the land. Now, this doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. Why? The Rabbi Shimon, lezel batar pidyon. Rabbi Shimon, we're going to try to prove, and then we'll eventually disprove this. That's why I want to set it all up so you don't get confused where we're going, because it's going to be a little long-winded. They're going to try to prove that Rabbi Shimon holds that everything goes by the moment that you pay the money. So if you go to pay the money later, at that moment you look and say, okay, well, what was mukdash? The trees and the field. Well, the field includes the trees. If we go by Rabbi Shimon, we should say it's just the field because it all goes. It doesn't matter whether you were makdish the trees at some point and later you were makdish the field. It all goes by the moment that you pay the money. And at the moment that you pay the money, you've already been makdish everything. It doesn't matter the order. And therefore, he should say that what? According to him, who holds that, makdish ba'ayin ra'ah makdish. So then if you look from a perspective, when you do the pidyon, you've already been makdish the trees and the land, but it really is just the land, and you should just pay the chomer beit zo'orin. So therefore, I Rabbi Shimon lezer bata pidyon v'lifriku agav arayu. Using, right, the karka should basically exempt the trees. Deha shamin aleh, because we've learned, and now we're going to have to prove how we've learned this, l'Rabbi Shimon da'aza bata pidyon. So again, what are we going to do now? We're going to bring a source that shows that Rabbi Shimon holds pidyon, which then is going to say this braita can't be Rabbi Shimon, which means we're stuck now with Rav Huna. Eventually, we're going to say, no, the reason Rabbi Shimon holds what he holds, and you thought it was connected to going after pidyon, it's not. It's really just from a drasha and the pasuk. Okay. D'tanya. Here's the case. Somebody buys a field, an ancestral field, from his father. Now, that's a weird case, because he buys it from his father, so now it's a sadeh mikneh. But when the father dies, it'll become his se'achuzah. It'll revert back to being a se'achuzah. Now, if you bought a field from your father, and you sanctified it, and then the father dies before he here's going to become before you do the pidyon. So if you're a Rabbi Shimon who holds, who goes after pidyon, what are you going to say? At that moment, it's a ste'achuza, right? So, meit aviv, minayin shtei lefanav k'ste'achuza, Talmud lomar, it's a drasha from the pasuk. Im etzkei miknato asher lo miste'achuza to, I told you we're going to go back to this pasuk. If it's a sadeh mikneh, which is not a ste'achuza, now you don't need the words, which is not a ste'achuza, you know a sadeh mikneh that you purchase is not a ste'achuza. So what does that come to teach you? Sadeh she'ena ruhuya liot ste'achuza. It has to exclude something that's not possible to revert back to being a ste'achuza. Yatztazo she'ruhuya liot ste'achuza, devar Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Shimon. So now, since it's going to revert back, right? And since it reverted back by the time of the pidyon, so we're going to say it goes by ste'achuza. Rabbi Meir wants to darshan something else from this pasuk. He says, no. Minayin lelokech sadeh me'aviv umet aviv. First the father dies, okay? Before he's makdish the field. And then, achar kach hikdisha, minayin shtei lefanav k'ste'achuza, which was to show Rabbi Meir doesn't think that our case is going to go by ste'achuza, because he says, our case, you were makdish the field when it was a skei mikneh, it was a purchase field. Then it's going to go by laws of purchase fields where we go based on the value of the field and not this amount. But if you bought it and then your father died before you sanctified it, then we'll treat it as a ste'achuza. How do we know that? Because you might have thought, well, it was a skei mikneh in the middle, right? And how do you relate to it? Well, you bought it. So maybe it's a purchase field. No, Talmud Lamar, Imat Skei Mikneh To, Asher Lo Miste'achuza To. He has the same drasha, but to darshan something else, right? To darshan an earlier stage, meaning if it became your ste'achuza before the father died, and then you sanctified it only after. So how do we know? She'eno ste'achuza, yatztazo, she's ste'achuza. So now what do they say? Ilu l'Rabbi Yehuda l'Rabbi Shimon, afilu hikdisha b'achar kach met, met av, ste'achuza havya, my time. So now we're going to say, right, according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, even if you were makdish it and then the father died, you were makdish it when it was a skei mikneh, we're still going to treat it as a chazeh achuza. So my time. Imishumkra, if you want to say they really darshaned it from the pasuk, well, remember, they both darshan the pasuk to different things. So theoretically, l'chid Rabbi Meir huda'ati, you could say that pasuk really teaches you Rabbi Meir, that only if you were makdish it after it reverted back. Okay? And therefore, it can't really be they learn it from the pasuk, and it must be, and here's we get to our conclusion, Ela lav mishum da'azo batar pidyon. It must be because they think that it goes by the moment that you redeem, which then goes back to our original question. If he holds the moment you redeem, in the case where first he did the trees, then he did in the braita, then he did the field, it should go by the field, because at the end, when you're standing at the shop pidyon, everything is mukdash, it's one whole package. And the fact that the braita splits and says, no, in that case you have to do both, shows it's not Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon holds lachar pidyon. And that's all because we're assuming he can't really darshan it from this pasuk, because the first obvious drasha from the pasuk is Rabbi Meir, which is a skei mikneh, which you purchased, but then it reverted back to being a ste'achuza because the father died, and then you were makdish it, not where you were makdish it before it reverted back to being a ste'achuza. So what are they saying now? Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzhak, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon, Kra Eshkachu v'Darish. No, they really did just darshan it from the pasuk. It had nothing to do with this Azal Batar Pidyon. They go based on the moment of Pidyon, which would then create a problem for us. No, you could say that halacha is a unique halacha based on a drasha from the pasuk. Now, how could you do that? Well, they'll say, which is always our classic, Im Ken, if you wanted to say just Rabbi Meir, Lichtov Kra Im Etzkei Miknato Asher Lo Achuzato. But my Misadeh, so the fact that it doesn't say Et sadeh mikneto, but it says from mi sadeh mikneto. They say that mem comes to give us an extra drasha, which is a sadeh she'en aruya liot ste'achuza, and that's how they get to their drasha from the mem. In other words, Rabbi Meir would be fine. We darshan just Rabbi Meir. They're going one step farther than Rabbi Meir. The reason is because they have two things to darshan. Number one, the line that it's not a ste'achuza, and from the mi sadeh, okay, from the mem. Now we're going to talk about cases that sometimes are treated, for certain issues, are treated like a ste'achuza, and for other issues are not treated like a ste'achuza. So, what's going to be the situation? And it's going to depend on drashot and the pasuk. Amar Papa, hikdish trashim. Let's say you were makdish a field that wasn't capable of growing anything, a rocky field. So, what do we say? Podan b'shivyan. What do? You redeem it based on its value, even though it's an ancestral field, since nothing can grow in it. Okay, now why does it have to do with growing? Because my taima, beit zera amarachmana, bahani la b'nei zriyaninu. The whole halacha, we're now going to divide halachot of steachuzah, some of them depend on land, any kind of land, and some of them depend on land that can grow produce. If this land can't grow produce, then there's no halacha of this zera beit chomer sorim, and it's going to be sold for its value. The ge'alan, but now there's another halacha, which is if you, lo ge'alan, if you don't redeem the steachuzah. Okay, let's say I take my ancestral field, I give it to Hekdesh, and then I never pay the money to Hekdesh. So what happens when the Yovel year hits? Okay, this is an interesting halacha. When the Yovel year hits, the land belongs to the Kohanim. The Kohanim get rights to that land. It's no longer my land. I've lost my ancestral property. Because I didn't pay the money, basically, it was, what does it mean? I lost it. I was basically machdishit. And Yovel comes, it now belongs to the Kohanim. So now, if I took this sadeh trashim, which can't grow produce, and I didn't redeem it before the Yovel year, yotzim b'yovel, it goes to the Kohanim in the Yovel year. Okay, it is treated like a steachuzah for that halacha, because that halacha of returning land and what happens to land in the Yovel year has nothing to do with land that you can grow produce on. It never says anything in the pasuk. My time, a sadeh amar rachmana, kol dehu, right? A sadeh, it says a field, any kind of field that you would sell, that you would makdish. What if, now we're going to get into laws of selling. Mahar trashin, remember I told you that if you sell a field that's a steachuzah, you can't buy it back within the first 2 years. But if you sell a regular field, you can buy it back within the first 2 years. So, koldu mahar trashin, if you sold a field that can't grow anything, nigalim bepachot mishtei shanim. You can redeem it within the first 2 years. Why? Why does it not fall into classic laws of steachuzah? My taima, mispar shnei tvuot amar rachmana. It says that you can't sell it until the person has had the opportunity to grow 2 seasons. Now, here, there's no 2 seasons to grow. The land won't grow anything. Bahai la b'nei tvuaninu. These can't grow anything, and therefore they're not part of that halacha. But lo ga'alan, if you didn't redeem them, choseret labalim b'yovel. They go back to their original owner in the Yovel year, because this is now, we're talking about a sadeh mikneh. A sadeh mikneh, a field that you sell, what happens? It reverts back to its original owners. And that relates to any field, right? Because my time, I have a shavla chuzato. The land always goes back to its original owner. And as you remember, just to not confuse you, first we started with hekdesh, and now we're talking about sales. Those are 2 different things, okay? There's 2 different tracks. So here, when it comes to the not buying back within the first 2 years, that's going to relate to things growing. But when it comes to land returning back to its original owner, that has nothing to do with anything growing. Next case, higdish ilanot. What if I sanctify trees? Podeh b'shoviyahen. I redeem them by their value. Okay, that makes sense. My taima, because beit zera amar rachmana v'lo ilanot. Right, it means a field and not trees. Lo ga'alan, if I didn't redeem them, ain yotzim l'kohanim b'yovel. They don't belong to the kohanim in the yovel. Why? V'yasadeh amar rachmana v'lo ilanot. This one is a little different from the others, because in this one we're going to say trees, in sanctifying trees, have nothing to do with land whatsoever, that no laws of steachuzah are going to apply to trees. But machar ilanot, if you sold trees, ain nigalim b'pachot mishtei shanim. But now we're going to say, if you sell trees in your field, you can't buy them back, just like you can't buy back land within the first 2 years, you can't buy back the trees. Why? My taima, shnei tvuot amar rachmana, vahane b'nei tvuot ninu. It all has to do with, can they grow produce? If you sell something, you have to give the person who bought it 2 years' worth of the produce. That would apply to trees, even though it's not a field. But lo ga'alam, but when it comes to redeeming them again, ein choseret labalim b'yovel. If you sold them, they don't revert back to their original owners. I don't get my tree back, right? I have my nice mango tree. I sell it to someone. I can't claim, now it's the Yovel year. My tree goes back to me. No, it doesn't work. Because why my taima? V'shav la'chuzato amar rachmana v'lo ilanot. It's talking about a field and not about a tree. Okay. Now we're going to go into detail about one of the things here. Amar, hikdish ilanot podeh b'shovyan. Okay, what did we say? If you makdish the tree, you're podeh according to its value. Amai. V'likdishu agav arayu, v'liflagu agav arayu. Why don't we say, when you're makdish the tree, what you really mean is, right, the tree takes its nourishment from the land, you really meant the land. And maybe then we should go by the land, and the land should be evaluated based on the set amount in the Torah. B'chi tema ilanot akdish, aralo akdish. If you want to say, no, he really just meant the tree and not the land, well, you can't say that. Because ha'amri nahardeah, they say in nahardeah that what? Man demazman le dikla l'chavre, someone who sells a palm tree to his friend, Kanele mishipula ba'ad tahoma. The friend acquires everything all the way down to the ground. That is, he gets all the land that's beneath the tree. So here you see that you do get the land. And if you do get the land when you get the tree, then theoretically, if you're matish the land, it should go along. If you're matish the tree, the land, it should be really land and not the tree. So they say, no. That case when they said in Nahardah that someone who sells it, the friend gets all the way down to the ground, is lav mi itmala. Wasn't it said about that? Bibamach matana. It's only when someone claims, I bought that tree from you and you sold me the ground underneath it. But if he doesn't claim that, then no. So therefore, if you're machdish it, we're going to assume it just means the tree and not the ground underneath. Tanu Rabbanan. Now we're going to, stemiknen noten shivyom. Now we're going to get back to the machloka between Rabbi Elazar and Chachamim about whether a ste mikne also goes for this specific value in the Torah, or does it go by the value of the field itself? Do you evaluate the field and then give that amount to the hektish? Tana Rabbanan, bimichsat. Remember I read that pasuk about the ste mikne, and it said, bimichsat erkecha. Ma ba lelamod, lefi shenemar zera chomer sorim b'chamishim shekel kesef, yachol af zadeh mikne ken. Once it gives that amount in the Torah, you might have thought it's also for a field that you purchased. Talmud lamar michsat, because it says michsat erkecha, it means for that value itself, meaning that goes by value. So now we're going to have to explain Rabbi Eliezer, which really makes no sense. Rabbi Eliezer omer neemar kam bechishav, v'neemar lahalam bechishav. It says there that they evaluate how many years till the Yovel year, and in both the Stei Mikneh and the Stei Achuzat uses the exact same word. What do we call that? Agzera Shava. Ma lahalan davar katsuv, so we can learn halachot from one to the other. Just like by Stei Achuzat, it's a set amount. Af kan davar katsuv, it's also a set amount. So now they want to know, wait a minute, so this Agzera Shava, only Rabbi Lezer holds by this? Ibai lu Rabbanan, itlu Agzera Shava, umafkina le lechomesh. Do they have the Gzera Sheva, but they learn a different halacha? What halacha? That just like you have to pay an extra fifth when you redeem the Stei Achuzah, you also have to pay the extra fifth when you redeem the Stei Mikneh. Odilma Leilu Gzera Sheva, or maybe they just don't hold by the Gzera Sheva. If you remember Gzera Sheva, it's something you learn from your rabbis, it gets passed down. You can't just say, oh, I see this word, I see this word. It has to be something you've learned. Maybe they don't hold by the Gzera Sheva, but Leilu Chomesh, and then they don't learn it to Chomesh either. So I'm a Rava. Rava says, Mistabra late lehu gzera shava. It must be they don't have a gzera shava. Why? Midigale rachmana chomash gabe stei achuzah, v'gabe makdish beito, havale shnei ktuvim haba'im ke'achad. Chol shnei ktuvim haba'im ke'achad, em alamdim. Since chomash appears not only in stei achuzah, it also appears by someone who's makdish his house, you also have to add a chomash. Therefore, we learn, we have this concept that once something is written more than once, it means it's just for those cases and not for anywhere else. And if it wanted to be for somewhere else, it would have also specified. Now, that's only if you say, remember, there's a machloket. Is it two ktuvim abim kechad em alamdim? Some people say, once if it says in two places, that's not enough to say it's exclusively in those two places. Some people say, only once it appears in three places is it exclusive. So, lamanda amar malamdim, that you could learn from two, they have a different answer. They have other places where chomesh appears. Midigale rachmana chomesh b'maser behema tohoa. Because it has by maser behemah tova and maser behemah tova, other halachot, havele tuva, there's more cases where chomesh appears, ve'ein melamdim. Okay, so in all those cases also, chomesh appears, and therefore we can't learn. Okay, now, this was Rava. Rava said, I think that they don't hold the Gzera Shava at all because they don't have Chomash by a Stei Mikneh. The Gemara is going to end. We'll end with this for today. Tanya Kabate de Rava Velo Mitame. This is an interesting proof. They say there's a Braita like Rava, but not for the same reason that Rava said. Right? Rava gave a reason of Shnei Ketuvim. Here we're going to have a different reason. Tanya, the Braita says, B'michsat ha'erkacha, that's the Pasuk we darshan, he kishoa katuv la'erchin. Ah, notice what word is in that Pasuk. Erkacha, which appears by Erchin also. Now, ma erchin emo si chomesh, when you said, I'm giving erki alai, you pay exactly the value. You don't have to add a chomesh. So, as de mikne emo si chomesh. So, from the similarity in the wording to erchin, it kind of references erchin. It teaches you that by ste mikne, you don't add the chomesh. You only add it in the ste achuzah. And therefore, it must be they don't have the gzera shah at all. Okay, we'll end here for today.